Welcome to the podcast series of Dave Gilpin. Dave could actually say anything he likes about himself at this point because he wrote the spiel. He's chosen, however, to make it entirely factual. Born in Kazakhstan and raised by a herd of wildebeest, Dave took a BA flight to the UK to pioneer the multi-congregational Hope City Church. To find out more, visit hopecitychurch.tv or davegilpin.com. Enjoy the ministry.
Welcome to Man Boobs and Other Human Rights, in defense of the male species. Sometimes men are made to feel wrong simply for being a man. Sure, men feel psychologically very insecure when the TV flicker isn't in their possession, but that's simply an inbuilt fear of having to watch another episode of Homes in the Country with pets that have medical problems. It's self-protection. We men may be biologically incapable of letting the fairer sex light the barbecue, but that's simply because fire is dangerous and we don't want to put the women in harm's way. They have colds, we have flu. We can't help it. It's just the way our bodies are wired. We're made to feel like we're over-egging the seriousness of our ailments, but surely the same can be said at times about women giving birth. If someone has committed a huge bank robbery involving millions of pounds, everyone still assumes it to be a man. If someone's being chased down for not paying their taxes, it's still assumed that they're being chased by the tax man, and that's not fair. Men are the butt of jokes everywhere, and where they once commanded respect, they're now in a difficult predicament of having to earn it. This is a pivotal time in our history. More men than ever before have been seen driving beige Volvos. They've given up being the man they used to be. A rising tide in sales of cardigans on the internet reflect a crisis of confidence amongst men of unprecedented proportions. It's time for men everywhere to arise. This is our hour to reclaim our genius, to stand up for our quirks and funny little mannerisms, and once again be proud of our manhood. This is a celebration of everything that makes men real men, a brilliant way of seeing things in a completely different way to women, our heartwarming nerdiness and our special gifts that are sometimes classified as disorders but are not. This is about human rights. May it help you regain your pride in something that was completely out of your control, being a man. It may well be pointed out that in the time it takes for us men to down a well-deserved cup of coffee, a woman can put the washing on, do the internet shopping, clean the inside of the windows, read the kids a story, and do a dance workout to the Ministry of Sound. That may look advantageous, but it's a certain recipe for burnout, and burnout is not what we men are after. We get cajoled and nagged about the two jobs that have needed to be done for the past 12 months. It may be true that if those two jobs were to do with the car or the TV, they'd be done pretty much straight away. But that's priorities, and you can't rush things. It could possibly be true that while women seek to ask for directions when lost, men like to try one more road configuration before they're forced into defeat. This isn't a case of manly stubbornness, but is actually an intelligence-gathering instinct at work that likes to survey the entire region in detail before leaving it. It could prove to be a lifesaver at some future date. It appears that while men are busy preparing for the mammoth responsibilities, cohabitation, parenthood, and how to sufficiently care for the mother-in-law in the twilight years, every woman is undertaking a course, a secret course, in the art of backseat driving. While men are consistently upbeat and generous, there's around a week of every month that every woman connects with the other side of Sharon Osbourne, and it's not very nice. It's hard being a man in the same way that it must be difficult being a child genius. You may look slightly strange, but you know that you're a custodian of something really quite special. There's several major differences between men and women that need to be explored in order to give back the confidence that today's man has been lacking greatly in. The first difference is to do with why men are always wrong and women always right. In every relationship, it's usually the man who says sorry first after a big barney. Can it really be true that he's wrong 99% of the time? Surely it takes two to tango. To answer this, one of the greatest conundrums of the relationship world, we have to start with the premise that it's 50-50. He's only wrong 50% of the time. Well, okay, 60%. We could even stretch it to 65%, but that's as far as we're ever going to go. So where did the discrepancy between 99% and 65% come from? Firstly, you need to know that men see things in black and white while women see everything in color. For example, if a woman has been let down again by her man for forgetting about the special restaurant they were going to go to on Thursday night, all because of his heavy work commitments, he'll certainly never forget at any other time, she'll yell at him for not caring. Her issue is that he always forgets important things to do with the two of them, ever since they got together 15¾ years ago. After his feeble yet almost sincere excuses, she declares that the relationship is all but on the rocks. He's unaware that he's been secretly compared to Mr. Darcy from the DVD collector's edition of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice she just lent from a girlfriend. Feeling trapped, he yells back at her and tells her that she reminds him of her mum. Uh-oh, she slaps him and walks off. After 25 minutes, he searches the house, finds her, and apologizes. They eventually kiss, clearly not with tongues, and make up. You can see that I've chosen a typical scenario. In a man's mind, the analysis is simple. He raised his voice and mentioned the mother-in-law in a cruel, uncaring way, and therefore, he was wrong. It's black and white. He recognized that he'd stepped into the black. In a woman's mind, there's no big analysis. She's been let down one too many times. Many things need to change. It's not a black and white issue. It's not about right or wrong. It's about feeling neglected and undervalued. That's why men say sorry most. Our man in question has carefully selected an obvious technicality to be wrong on. He may not see the full color expose of his long-term neglect, but he does see that he's overstepped the mark. Now that's what makes men so great. They find an excuse, resolve it, throw it in the skip with a few other attached issues, and move on. Another factor is, however, at play here. Since men are perfectionists at heart, which is why what we do and what we own is either perfect or a shambles, saying sorry is our quick fix back to perfection. It doesn't really deal with the central theme of neglect that has been dramatically flagged up, but that'll take a few years to rectify. Men hate years. They only want to see seeable destinations, and by apologizing, he's found one. Women love a good apology, even if it doesn't quite deal with the underlying issues that she knows so well. Here's the top 10 things that men can't help. Number one, all men have refrigeration blindness. It begins to develop during puberty. What they're looking for inside the fridge is the last thing they actually see. Number two, long after the movie is finished and everyone's gone to bed, men are still up watching the entire movie again with the director's commentary, deleted scenes, and alternative endings. Number three, if their partner went out to get a beehive hairstyle, 90% of men would not notice until it was pointed out to them. Number four, men are incapable of letting a woman drive the car while they're in it. It's not that he doesn't trust her, but her cornering acceleration and braking could do with a little extra work. Number five, if a man has an itch, he has to scratch it whenever and wherever the itch may occur. Women don't understand how itchy a man can get. Number six, most women believe that a friend will be impressed by her new outfit, new house, news from her sister in Spain, and the height of her growing children. Most men believe that a friend will be impressed by his new free broadband deal. Number seven, in their lifetime, men go from owning a Slinky, a 3D viewfinder, and a Nintendo Watch to owning a complete series of Top Gear on DVD and a set of Simpsons clothing accessories. Number eight, most women suffer from disliking the way they look, while most men suffer from the opposite. They think they look brilliant, especially when naked. Number nine, if a woman needs to carry some extra personal effects on holidays, she'll buy herself a shoulder bag. If a man needs to carry some extra stuff, he'll buy a bum bag. Number 10, while women talk by telling a story, men talk by saying, I've got three things to say about that. They love lists. The second difference between men and women is to do with why men don't talk and women talk a lot. There's an unseen protractor situated at the feet of every man. When two men meet to talk, the protractor, knowing the 90-degree rule, sets about to position the men precisely at right angles to each other. Here they remain until the conversation is concluded, and for men it doesn't take long. While women spend their time eyeballing, surveying the mouth, checking the furrows of the forehead, and catching every inch of body language, men stare into the distance. It's for a good reason, though. Who really wants to study a man's mouth with bits of yesterday's korma and today's lunch stuck to its sides? There are some pretty valid reasons, though, why men don't talk much and women talk a lot. Firstly, we men deal with conclusions and endings, while women tend to describe the entire journey. Men ask, "What happened?" while women ask, "How did it happen?" For a man, "We're engaged" is then followed by some whooping from his man-mates. For a woman, "We're engaged" is then followed by "Tell us how it happened" from her girlfriends. One requires a pat on the back, the other requires coffee and cake, and lots of it. Men deal in facts, even if a little elasticated from time to time, while women deal in everything else. If a man almost dies and tells you about it, they're looking for praise. They made it through and they're the logical hero of their story. If a woman almost dies and tells you about it, they're looking for sympathy. It could have been the end. Now that cuts a man's conversation down even more. Not only do they deal in fact, but only in impressive facts. Another reason why men don't talk and women do is because we men want relief from the day's troubles. We don't want to talk about stuff. We want to forget about stuff. Women are the opposite. When they see us, they want to tell us about everything. Reliving the day is all a part of a woman de-stressing and being released from all the pressure that the day brings with it. A man, however, just needs some cave time. Compartmentalization is seen by some as a way of not really dealing with stuff. It's actually a gift that enables a man to deal with all the mucky stuff at a more apt time. That's why women cry regularly while men have spasmodic mini breakdowns. One's a kettle, the other's a pressure cooker. There's one more reason why men find it hard to talk and women find it easy. It's because when men want to talk, they have to collect all the words from different parts of their brain. That's why men swear more than women. It's a stopgap measure that allows them a little breathing space to find a selection of words and put them together in the right order. Women's words come to them the moment they open their mouths. They have instant recall. So for a man to talk to another man for 10 minutes is the same in energy as a woman to talk to her girlfriend for 10 hours. Here's the top 10 things you rarely hear a man say, and it's not our fault. Number one, "I've just come back from your mother's house. I just felt that she needed some encouragement." Number two, "It's my goal to find you that special pair of shoes you've been longing for. Let's start with this shoe shop and work our way through the mall." Number three, "Would it be okay if we just had a cuddle tonight because I want to be fresh for work tomorrow?" Number four, "No, I didn't notice that anyone was topless at that beach we just visited." Number five, "I'll change the nappy, heat the bottle and put the little one to bed while you just relax and watch another makeover show." Number six, "I'm so looking forward to Reese Witherspoon's new romantic comedy." Number seven, "I really do have a problem with the size of my thighs." Number eight, "I love it when you drive, it's so relaxing." Number nine, "I realized that it's only 2 days before we leave for our holidays, so I've packed all my clothes already." And number 10, "That new moisturizer you've been using has made your skin come alive." The fourth difference between men and women is to do with why men crave admiration and women don't understand. A man decided while driving his partner in the country to overtake a lorry that was blocking his style. Upon overtaking, another lorry was found to be heading directly towards him. Narrowly missing death, he veered back onto the correct side of the road just ahead of the overtaken lorry. His partner called him a right idiot. In his heart, like all men, he was actually looking for congratulations. What he wanted was to hear, "We made it thanks to your skillful driving. Schumacher better watch out." Upon telling her his need for admiration, not criticism, she promptly told him to drop her off and fill the car up with his men mates. She stated that they could provide the goo-goos and the ga-gas that were so desperately lacking. The problem we face as men is that women aren't geared to admire the way we men need admiring. How many of us stand in front of the mirror each night admiring our muscle definition only to be met by a tut, a momentary glance, and a raised eyebrow? It's not right. The need for admiration in every man is mind-boggling, from clinching a million-pound deal to burping the national anthem. We need praise. The problem we have, however, is that in a world steeped in criticism, a spoonful of praise just won't do. Dr. Phil reckons that for every one word of criticism, 100 words of praise are needed to offset the effects of it. In the experience of men up and down the country, and even in Iceland, this simply isn't true. We're still reeling from that one idiot's comments, even if 100 people have called us brilliant. The reason for this is in the detail. When someone criticizes you, it's usually pretty specific, like you've got a big nose and smell like garlic. When someone praises you, it's usually pretty lame, like you've done well today. The difference is huge. One singled out a facial feature and even a specific smell. The other has singled out nothing. That's the way it goes. Your boss says you're rubbish at sales, but when you do well in the ad campaign, all it's ever said is thanks, you've done well. But what was done well? The sharp tip of criticism is never sanded down by the vagueness of praise. Don't just tell us we're no good at sales. Tell us we're the Buzz Lightyear of advertising. Tell us that we're the glue that keeps the company together. Tell us that we've got an acute eye for clinching the deal. Don't just tell us we've got a big nose. Tell me anything good, but make it specific. People work hard at being nasty, but don't work half as hard at being nice. And it's time for it all to stop. Men need praise, and we're going to get it, even if it means giving a bit from time to time. Here's a little poem called The Big Idea. In a cave once lived a man. He liked his cave where he behaved. Our man was disturbed by a light, a thought, something he'd heard. He'd turn a trunk into a wheel and sell the idea in a momentous, massive deal. He'd go out and live well fed by the med. So out of his cave he went, a rugged hunk did cut 4 slices of a trunk and attached them to the edge of a galvanized iron sheet he'd found in the hedge. Then he realized that this was the 21st century AD, not BC. So he said goodbye to his massive deal and all the trimmings that felt so real. He went back to the cave where he behaved. The fifth difference between men and women is found in the question, why are men scared of homosexuals while women don't mind them? Most men would never admit to their fair share of homophobia, but under the PC veneer lies 2 general anxieties. One is the outside chance that they may be gay, and the other is the claustrophobic feeling of possibly being gawked at by another man whilst in public. Because men are always peckish for some visual hors d'oeuvres, and left unrestrained become like primitive hunters looking for fresh mongoose, they're frightened that somebody may be doing the same to them. Women, however, feel very comfortable in the presence of a gay friend when they find themselves in the public domain. They may not agree with their disposition, but they're comfortable with it. They're relieved that that look, that touch, and that hug from the opposite sex is no more than what it is. A straight man, however, in a gay world may look relaxed, but those twitchy eyes tell a different story. Heterosexual women are not frightened by lesbians, but heterosexual men are always on homo alert. Even in our open and encompassing society, a gay man is still grid referenced in any office party and marked with a homo tracker device. It's not fair, but homophobia still reigns. There is a problem, however, with the if you're not straight, you must be gay rule of thumb that's around. Every imaging male at some stage of their sexual awakenings has this kind of seesaw thinking going on inside. Am I gay is a question that even Rambo would have asked himself growing up. It's a widespread belief that sexual orientation is not down so much to choice, but to genes. You either have a gay gene or you don't. And that's what commands much of our modern machoism and homophobia. Looking over what seems to be a cliff-edge divide between straight and bent, we can tend to overcompensate by the most macho of behaviors. Next time you see a man grunting, walking like a gorilla, swilling down beer by the bucket load and parading his sexual conquests, he's actually trying to bury his fear that he could possibly become a homosexual. Ask him next time you see him. The best thing that's come into a man's world recently is the birth of the metrosexual. He may not be macho, he may not be homo, he could be metro. Yippee! Metro means that if you work on TV or involved in the ballet or the theatre, you don't have an obligation to be gay. You can still get your nails done, trim your eyebrows, love shoes, have a porcelain doll collection and not be gay. You might be, but you don't have to be. You can drink wine, not beer, go clothes shopping rather than go to the football, cross your legs as opposed to letting the world see your genitals, go to drama school instead of the territorial army, and not, you've got it, be gay. You can see that I'm adjusting the allegoric pendulum here on the swingometer. I'm doing it to be fair on men. I can fully understand the overcompensation the world around us makes because of centuries of cruelty toward gay men. But that overcompensation, along with the gene theory, has moved the male population from one kind of homophobia to another. This time, it's more secretive. Now that I've made thousands of men more relaxed about their manhood or seeming lack of it, it's time that some of you faced your fears and stopped walking around like you just came out of a slimy pit. It's time you stop forcing your child to wear camouflaged combat gear and allow him to make his own choice of color clothing. It's definitely time to enroll in the hairdressing course. The world needs more straight men who can cut, color, and blow dry while sympathizing with the strain that wearing heels all day can have on the lower back. The sixth difference between men and women is to do with why men like the exact opposite of what women like. It's always a huge gamble answering the relationships ads in your favorite newspaper. The chances that the description of the person looking to find a mate lines up with the true description are the same as Stevie Wonder doing a photo fit on himself. When the description is pretty, disarming blonde with perfect smile and a great eye for class, don't be surprised if the one-armed lady with the glass eye and dentures sitting by the bar is your woman. The problem with these kinds of ads isn't just the physical descriptions, but also the interests that they describe. How do they get time to potter with all of the country walks, plays, theatres, weekends away, and antique fairs that they're constantly attending? The real truth behind relationships is that opposites usually attract. She likes chick flicks, he likes adventure. He likes crispy duck, she likes omelettes. He likes trance, she likes country and western. He's an introvert, she's an extrovert. He's indoorsy, she's outdoorsy. And both are attracted to each other. To understand how the law of opposites attract works is to understand the male psyche. When a man's playing golf, he either wants his mates there or he wants to be there all by himself. He's usually not keen on mixing romance with golfing endeavors. If a man has a few spare hours and a busy schedule, he's usually craving his own space. To be tucked away listening to Springsteen while trawling through a magazine is a momentary slice of heaven. Too many similar interests leads to suffocation. Suffocation usually leads to death, and no one likes that. Men need to retreat. That's why they so often glaze over at anything they're not usually interested in. They're having a little much-needed cave time. The idea that every waking hour is spent with one's partner is not healthy. Yuck! Every relationship needs time to breathe. There's another big problem with having everything in common. You'll end up so heavily in debt that you'll probably lose your relationship anyway. Fine dining, the theater, city breaks, spa getaways, exclusive shopping, going to the races. This could only be sustained by criminal activity. Possibly a high-flying exec could afford all that she or he wants. The dilemma, however, with hooking up with a high-flying exec is that they're so often flying high, they never come home to then go out again. And when they do get home, they don't want to go out again. If you're single and looking for the love of your life, get a piece of paper right now and write down all of the things you'd like your invisible partner to have in common with you. Also describe the personality type that most excites you. Now light a fire just outside your back door. Screw the piece of paper up with both hands and let it burn. The chances of that person being the right person for you are slim and none. I'm putting my money on none. And finally, we've heard the complaints night after night. I couldn't sleep because of your snoring. You yanked the duvet off me at 2 a.m. and you woke me up, and your breath was like that of a warthog in a garlic patch. For a start, blame the Indian for putting those extra spices in that glorious curry. We get blamed for things that we actually are the victims of ourselves. A scientific report has finally come out to say that when men spend the night with a partner, their sleep patterns are disturbed whether they make whoopee or not. They state that if a man has an important day ahead, it would be better for him to head off to the spare room. That's proof that it's women who are doing most of the disturbing and not the men. It's brilliant when science finally backs men and makes a mockery of all the complaints that women lambast us with every morning. That is, in fact, just the tip of the iceberg. We're blamed for so many other things. If a piece of toast escapes from the bin liner while a man dutifully takes it outside to the wheelie bin and is then trodden into the carpet by their fat-footed teenage son, the man is to blame. If a woman says to her man in the car, "I'll meet you at the front entrance of the shopping center in 20 minutes, and he finally arrives in 40 minutes, he will get the blame. The real fault is that she never explained which front entrance. It's a hard call, simply being a man. Men have become like the punching bag for unwanted frustration. We've been blamed from everything from mood changes to premature aging. It's time for men everywhere to arise. No, we won't be taking it on the chin like a man anymore. Men have rights too. There is, however, a right way and a wrong way to finally stand up for one's rights. The wrong way is to argue your case. You can generally never win an argument with a woman. You can feel that you've started to really win, then suddenly you're outflanked by a surprise attack involving stuff from your past that you'd totally forgotten about until now. You'll be tempted to do the mother-in-law parallel, but you know that that will only cause her to dig in deeper. We don't want that. The perfect solution is to be utterly convinced that you really are right and proceed to ignore any accusation, swiftly moving the conversation onto frivolous things like children and holidays. There's a reason why a whale is the most passive creature in the ocean, because it secretly knows it's the biggest. There were three married men having a chat in an Irish pub in Istanbul about how much authority they actually possessed over their wives. The first two men were quite pleased with their level of control. They then looked at the third man, who was looking a little bashful, and quizzed him on his relationship with his wife. "Only last week," he said, "she came to me on her hands and knees." The two men were impressed. She said, "Get out from under the bed and fight like a man." It's time for men everywhere to come out from the place of hiding. Fighting is futile against the verbal weaponry of the fairer sex, but ignoring their prickly provocation will prove to be a masterstroke for justice and reason. When you're right, you don't fight. Remember that. This has been Man Boobs and Other Human Rights in Defense of the Male Species. Goodbye.